You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of March 29th, 2016, and episode number 259. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, the week started out slow, but I'll tell you what, it sure gained a lot of momentum. There's a lot of stories tonight, a lot of ground to cover, and it's everything. This week's news includes an Atlas bear update that I talked about last week. Keep an eye out for the tiger. Bigfoot replaces the gopher. The heck is that story about? Well, you'll find out. Another UFO crashes in Roswell. Uh-oh. Will the Stanley Hotel be closing its doors to ghost hunters? Randy takes his money off the table. And we'll talk about the Ten Commandments of ghost hunting. And keep your eye in the skies for the Green Comet. That's right. It's not Krypton coming, folks. It's a Green Comet. And we'll talk about that cheesy story about purported satanic rituals. And we'll also have the book of the week with a little cryptid flair for you. And conferences, conventions, hopefully I'll have enough time to jam all this stuff in here into this little microphone here. And so sit back, enjoy the ride. It's going to be fun tonight. And tonight's show is brought to you by Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMHS schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuuniversity.org. And hopefully my class on the E4 method will be coming soon to Thomas Francis University. Just got to put the finishing touches on that thing. And it's nice to be freed up from that a little bit for the meantime, so I can concentrate on some paranormal conventions and things that are coming up here in April and May. And first up, just over 2 weeks away, April 16th, the Butler Paranormal Convention. The Butler Organization for Research of the Unexplained, or BORU, and Center for Unexplained Events, Q, will be hosting the April 16th Butler Paranormal Convention at the Tanglewood Senior Center in 10 Austin Avenue, Lindora, Pennsylvania. The event will run from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Admission at the door is $10, and you can save a dollar off with a donation of a non-perishable food item, and you must bring one food item per each ticket to be discounted. And scheduled speakers include myself, Karen Dolan, Ronald Murphy, Brett McGinnis, and Stan Gordon. There'll also be vendors, book signings. Men in Black were going to be there. They were there last year too. Door prizes, raffles, and a whole lot more. A lot of great people were there last year, and a lot of great people will be there this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. And what else we have here events-wise? Well, just over a month away is the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure with host Eric Altman in Farmington, Pennsylvania, Stan Gordon, Squatch Detective radio host Steve Coles, Dave Dragason, and wildlife biologist Rob Gratson will also be there. And May 7th, trapper John R. Tice from the TV show Mountain Monsters, as seen on Destination America, he's going to be there. Rumor has it that a couple of other guys from that show may also be making an appearance as well. So what else? is they just announced the lineup here, which looks pretty cool. I wasn't aware of some of this stuff. I didn't know who what the workshops are going to entail. And the event kicks off at 10 a.m. with Tim Cassidy. He's going to be talking about animal track identification and outdoor safety. And then for 45 minutes. So then I'll be speaking at 11 o'clock on cryptozoology, the basics of cryptozoology. And right after me will be the host, Eric Altman. We'll be talking about track casting. And I'm going to have a bunch of tracks. I'm going to bring a bunch of casts, I should say, to the event. And so that'll be an interesting kind of thing to be wedged in between those two guys, talking about track identification and track casting. And then after Eric at 1:15 to 2:15 will be the Squatch detective, Steve Coles. Then after him, Stan Gordon from 2:30 to 3:30, and followed by Dave Dragason and Rob Gratson, 3:45 to 4:45. It's going to be Friday night. There's going to be an afternoon hike, an evening hike. Don't know if I'll make the afternoon hike, but definitely 7:30 nighttime outing. I'll be there. Flashlights and all kinds of cool gear in tow, looking for the big hairy guy. There's also going to be some of those Saturday as well. If you don't want to go, you don't have to go. You can hang out at the campground, and they're going to have a campfire, and you can talk about Bigfoot stories around the campfire, and I don't know, maybe roast some stuff and sing Kumbaya or whatever you do. So it's going to be a lot of fun at the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. And the link is there in the chat room. Thank you, Dita. That's a little bit a ways away here, but I'm really excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. 3-day, two-night public camping outing for everybody. It's going to be awesome. And it's going to be held at Benner's Meadow Run Campground. And if you're not going to be staying at the campground, there is a separate $4.50 visitor fee that you'll have to pay to go to that event. And all proceeds, just received word that Eric broke even. So all the money he's put into this event, he's gotten back through all the payments and everybody who's going to be going. So everything after that is going to go to two benefit causes here. One is a Unity, a Journey of Hope, and the other is Fayette County Lucky Paws Animal Rescue. It's a different one. They had a different one before, but unfortunately things couldn't be worked out. So now they're going with a different animal rescue lineup, which is great. Kind of touches me in a certain way. I lost my dog a few months ago. So it's great that we're going to be benefiting those particular places as well. Then after that, a few days after that event, I'll be at the Westerville Public Library. Again, talk more about that when that time gets a little closer. Talking about cryptozoology there, it's going to be a different program than what I've done at the prior two events. Probably more close in line with what I'm going to do at Butler, because at the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure, I won't have PowerPoint. I'm just going to be up there, standing up there, winging it. It's going to be fun. And I want to talk again. This is the last week I'll be able to talk about this. This is happening this weekend. Friends of Prospect Place is presenting a public ghost hunt event with author and investigator Jeff Scott Cole and Jonathan Robson. Now, Jeff is the author of Ghostly Encounters, Confessions of a Paranormal Investigator, which was the book of the week last week here on the Paranormal News Insider. And I also got to hang out with Jeff during a book signing up in Mentor, Ohio, up there by Lake Erie, at Barnes & Noble a few months ago. So Jeff and Jonathan will be hosting a public ghost hunt on Saturday, April 2nd at Prospect Place in Dresden, Ohio. This event is for those 18 and older, and tickets will only be available in advance. So again, no tickets available at the door. The cost is only $30. That's cheap. Not cheap in what you're going to get when you get there. It's a great place. I've seen it, but I've never been in there. It's full of a lot of interesting stories. And I know some people that have investigated there. It's very active. And all proceeds to that event will donate to the George W. Adams Educational Center. So if you're interested there, I wouldn't worry about Facebook and all that stuff. You're running out of time. If you have PayPal, contact the George W. Adams Educational Center at gwacenter@gmail.com and use April 2 Public Hunt in the subject line and request the PayPal link. You can also get more information at ghostlyencounters.net about his book. And I think they have links to the Prospect Place investigation. Again, this weekend, there's a bunch of events coming up this weekend. And later on in the show, hopefully I have time to cut to that. And we'll talk about some of the cool stuff going on around the convention scene. But in the interim, cryptid news. I have a quick update on the purported Atlas Bear story that I covered last week, which was a video from Algeria, Africa. Earlier this month showed what was described as an extinct Atlas Bear standing at the top of the hill. Now, I was hopeful that this might actually turn out to be truthful and really what was described in the video. And it just, a lot didn't look right. I mean, the coloration to me looked right. The ears looked a little bit too big. They looked way off. And the animal just stood there. It just didn't seem natural. Well, the truth came out. And apparently, I was wrong. Yes, but that's one of the rare times you're going to hear me say that, especially here documented on the radio. It was a striped hyena after all. And the striped hyena had been captured in a trap. That's why it wasn't moving around or doing anything. Not sure why they lied about it and said it was an Atlas bear, but nonetheless, it was a hyena, striped hyena. One of the witnesses that was present there, I guess, came forward and let this be known. Now, the hyena had attempted to free itself prior to this video and apparently became extremely dirty from the mud, dirty brown. So that's why it was the coloration was completely wrong for this. And unfortunately, also from what I've gathered, the hyena was unfortunately killed by the locals. And this is apparently an ongoing thing with the striped hyenas. They're quickly becoming I don't know what their status is, but I know that they're becoming endangered because they're being killed off quite a bit. They're losing their habitat, and sad ending to this story. But at least now I know the truth, as no matter how unfortunate it is, but that's the truth. And we can move away from that story, unfortunately. But some ongoing kind of stuff here from Australia. And I talk about the Tasmanian tiger or the thylacine quite a bit. It pops up quite a bit here on this show. It's another one of my favorite cryptids. Not quite my favorite. My favorite would be probably the mountain lion, the eastern mountain lion variety. But the Tasmanian tiger is pretty cool when you think about it. An animal like that, that just existed about 80 years ago, hasn't been seen since, but hundreds of sightings down in Australia and all over the place. And I'm going to throw that a little link here to that story. Yes, the land down under. A Tasmanian tiger was sighted last December at the Venus Bay Caravan Park in Venus Bay, Australia, which is that is located on the southern tip of the southeastern part of the continent, just off of Bass Strait, which separates Australia from Tasmania with about 150 miles worth of rough water. So picture Australia, that weird little shape. It's on the right-hand side all the way down, that little bump on the bottom there. On March 16th of this year, a man in Inverloch, which is 25 kilometers or a 15-mile drive from Venus Bay, also saw a Tasmanian tiger. Well, the man in Inverloch was sure what he saw was a Tasmanian tiger. I know what I saw. Probably that's what he said. Well, it probably sounded a little different. I know what I saw. Tasmanian wolf is another name for the Tasmanian tiger, or what is properly known as the thylacine. And he based this on its tail structure, as well as the distinctive stripes on its side. So if you've ever seen a thylacine, I know I showed the videos here one of the last times I talked about thylacines on the Paranormal News Insider. I had some links to videos, and you could see these animals actually walking around in captivity at a zoo from the early 1900s, 1936 or so, or probably 1935, I think, right before it died. But they have very distinctive tails. The way that structure is, the way it comes out, it's a very stiff tail. It's very, very unique in the animal world, even in Australia, which has got some very strange animals down there. Well, His sighting occurred on Wednesday, March 16th at around 10 p.m. local time as he was driving. So it was dark out, but he knew what he saw. The thylacine is described as having a dog or wolf-like head and, like I mentioned, a stiff tail, and the legs were relatively short. Body hair was dense, short, and soft. It was a large carnivorous marsupial that died out during the 1900s, with the last captive thylacine dying on September 7th, 1936 in Hobart, Tasmania. Hundreds of thylacines were exported to zoos where they did not survive very long in captivity. And while there have been numerous reports of thylacine sightings in Australia, the animal is said to have died out no less than 2,000 years ago on the continent, with them surviving in Tasmania, where even there on occasion there was a purported sighting, yet no claims have ever been substantiated. So the big thing here, when you're talking about Tasmanian tigers, Tasmanian wolf, or thylacine, all the same guy, is that when you hear about it on the mainland of Australia, granted it's a huge, huge continent, not likely. They haven't been seen, haven't been documented, and there's no evidence of them being around since over 2,000 years ago. But on Tasmania, which is, again, about 150 miles off the southern coast, southeastern coast of Australia, up until 1937, these little guys were running around. So it'd be a little bit more believable to hear a story out of Tasmania than it would be in Australia. But nonetheless, pretty cool story, and kind of one of those cryptid stories that you kind of push for, you kind of hope for. But again, hoaxes are universal. It's not just a North American thing. It's a worldwide problem. And unfortunately, also is misidentification. So, well, that's to be expected. And now we're going to talk about Bigfoot, a couple of Bigfoot stories. And the book of the week is also Bigfoot related. And we've all heard of, the Patterson-Gimlin film. Now, this was shot in 1967 in Northern California, and many of the other early sightings of Bigfoot were in Southern Washington State. And Bigfoot has also been seen throughout the Midwest and is even named Skunk Ape in Florida. He's got a lot of regional names all over the United States, all over North America. However, Remmer, Minnesota, has staked a claim to being the home of Bigfoot. No, not just the home of Bigfoot, but the official home of Bigfoot, as determined by the Remmer, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Huh. Well, the city cites that stories of Bigfoot have been appearing locally since the late 1800s, even though the name of Bigfoot really wasn't even used until 1958. But let's not let the facts get in the way of a good story. The town also states that there have been numerous other sightings over the years, including one on a trail cam in 2009 that went on to be nationwide news. Well, I remember that photograph and especially the story behind it. And I also remember that most people at the time believed this was just a person wearing dark clothing. The figure seemed to be wearing gloves, and a distinctive line could be seen where a jacket met the middle part of the body. And the legs, well, the legs looked like somebody wearing pants. They looked very stiff. There was no muscle rippling or anything like that. For me, it's not quite convincing enough to put up a plaque or to a little road sign, welcome to the home of Bigfoot, outside your city limits with your population of 362 or however many people live in Remmer. Now, the Pilot Independent newspaper based in Walker, Minnesota, which is about 30 miles west of Remmer, states, quote, "Chamber members have a commitment to gathering and preserving everything and anything that can be known about Bigfoot. The Remmer Chamber of Commerce will host a kickoff celebration on April 9th. It includes a presentation by the head of Bigfoot research in Minnesota, a luncheon, live entertainment, and a Bigfoot scavenger hunt, among others," unquote. Sounds like a blast. Maybe I'll go up there for that. Well, no word on if Bigfoot will be on hand signing the autographs or accept its key to the city. Now, Minnesota is known as the land of 10,000 lakes, formerly known as the North Star State, the Agate State, and the Gopher State. Now, no word either if it will become the Bigfoot State or become Bigfoot will become the state's official animal. Minnesota actually does not have an official animal, but since 1971, the white-tailed deer has been proposed as the state mammal 8 times. Other creatures proposed as representations of the state have included the northern leopard frog, the eastern timber wolf, the 13-lined ground squirrel, and Blanding's turtle. Huh. Well, you know what? Get to the back of the bus, boys, because here comes Bigfoot. But we'll keep an eye on that. I mean, Remmer, Minnesota, because of a couple sightings and one really horrible video, or rather not even a video, it was a photograph. Well, I guess you got to sell tickets. You got to bring people in somehow, right? I'm just waiting to order my T-shirt from their official gift shop, probably coming soon. So let's jump to UFO news. Some strange stuff happening in UFO news this week. Well, not a whole lot of stuff, just one particular strange story that I came across that's kind of gaining a little bit of momentum out there. It's people are really talking about this story. I don't know why. It's interesting. But here it is. Well, I'm sure you're pretty familiar with the story about a certain UFO crash in New Mexico, which happened in July of 1947. I think we've all heard about the Roswell incident. The whereabouts of this purported craft are unknown, with various stories told over the years of possible holding locations for this particular craft. The local economy has supported the Roswell incident through hotels, eateries, and even the International UFO Museum and Research Center. Well, one known UFO was reported stolen on March 23rd, and a hunt for the missing craft was on. The flying saucer in question had been sticking into the wall of the International UFO Museum and Research Center in downtown Roswell on Main Street. The craft had served as a decoration on the outside of the building since 1992, and it had recently been damaged in a snowstorm in December. The UFO had just been repaired and was waiting to be reinstalled when three men were caught loading the UFO into a pickup truck and took off out of town with it. Well, they weren't caught, but they were caught on tape. Surveillance tape showed the men loading the craft into their truck and heading out of town west on US 70. The following day, police discovered the remains of the UFO as it had been smashed into pieces and found along the road just 2 miles outside of Roswell. Sad story there. The UFO destroyed. All evidence gone. The museum does plan to build and replace the shattered UFO, but has not released any details as of yet. Now, an update on the story yesterday. One of the people responsible for the theft and destruction of the UFO was apprehended. The person was identified as a teenager, oh gosh, big shock there, who lives in South Roswell, and police state that tips led to his arrest. So somebody rolled over on him. Now, two other suspects remain in the wind for now. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see if the Roswell cops kick some doors in and arrest those UFO destructors. And I wonder what their motive was. Well, obviously, they were just probably having fun. But good thing they didn't think this thing out. I mean, think about it. Had they actually planned this out, they're probably, you know, just partying or just had a random thought as they're driving around the strip, which is probably just Main Street there. You know, if they had planned that out, they could have, you know, rented a dark SUV or something, or a dark truck, pickup truck, and could have worn like tuxedos, dark, you know, dark clothes and sunglasses. Now that would have really been interesting video, and it really would have stirred things up. Would have been interesting. And yes, I'm referring to the Men in Black. And that's your UFO news this week on the Paranormal News Insider. And I last week I was looking at some stats, and I was just kind of thinking about kicking the show out to a couple of other areas out there. And the show is already available. As soon as it's done, it pretty much within a few minutes, Cindy, my producer, pushes the show out through Mixcloud. And Mixcloud, you can also download an app or you can listen in on the web. So as soon as the show's over, if you miss something, you can wait a couple of minutes and it'll pop up in Mixcloud and you can download and listen to the archive. And the next day when I get around to it, or sometimes that night if I happen to be off of work the next day, I upload it to Podbean. Podbean is my official holder for my archives of the show. And all the links to all of the archives are available on the Podbean site at pni.podbean.com. And a lot of other information, all the linkies to all my stuff there on Paranormal News Insider are located on Podbean, but it also through there goes out to other places. So you can listen in because I realize that people have their own favorite little place to listen to shows or listen to podcasts and other things and radio shows. And so I had a request. Somebody asked me if I would put it out there for other little networks or little shows or whatever they're called. And it's also available on iTunes as well. iTunes is like, you have to do that. I'd say a good almost half of the shows that are listened in through my Podbean, through all my statistics that I look at, are from Apple products. So iTunes is a necessary thing to have if you're going to be doing a show and you want to get it out to there to a larger audience. iTunes is a must. Well, looking at some other things, I've thrown it out there to Stitcher as well as to Spreaker. Now, Spreaker is a kind of a gateway to another big place out there that so far has not accepted my information yet. But nonetheless, you can still get it through the web and through their apps. So if you're a Stitcher fan or a Spreaker fan, the Paranormal News Insider is now available through their apps and as well as on their website. So I'm trying to get the show out there to other places so you can listen to the show however you like. And working on some other things, there's two other big guys out there that I'm trying to work on, but they're giving me a little resistance. I don't know why, but hang in there. And thank you for all the people that do listen in live. And you can always listen live. Go into the live link there on WCJVRadio.com. And it says chat room, but you don't have to go into the chat room. You can just listen in at the bottom there. You can just click listen and listen in live. You know, you're missing out. You're missing out on some good conversations. People talk about all kinds of stuff. It gets a little wild, gets out of control sometimes. We have to call the internet police in there to break up some stuff. But it's fun, and it's nice to talk about what I'm talking about, and people speculate on different things or find information, or you can get more information about the links I'm talking about and the stories that I'm talking about here as well as you listen live. But if you like to just listen in, relax, listening to my calm and soothing voice going through your earphones, go for it. That's cool too. Now, ghost news, some interesting stuff, something spreading like wildfire. Sure, everyone's heard about it. Anybody in the ghost field is probably freaking out about this right now and wondering how far reaching this particular story is going to end up getting. It's probably going to get in trouble for what I'm going to say here. So I'm a little hesitant to talk about this story, but I'm going to say it anyway because that's what I do. But just my opinion here. And like I said, news spread like wildfire about an announcement concerning ghost hunting at the Stanley Hotel in Colorado. And this information came down on March 24th. The Stanley Hotel served as the inspiration for Stephen King to write his popular book, The Shining. Although the 1980 movie was not shot at the Stanley Hotel, but at the Timberline Lodge in Mount Hood, Oregon. What you might not know about the Stanley Hotel is that a television series called The Shining was shot at the Stanley Hotel. It also made an appearance in the 1994 comedy Dumb and Dumber, as well as many other television shows and commercials. You might also not know that it was built by Freeland Oscar Stanley of Stanley Steamer fame and opened on July 4th, 1909. The hotel is located just over 10 miles away from the Rocky Mountain National Park. And the hotel's official paranormal investigation team that conducts guided tours made the official announcement on Facebook on March 24th. And again, It spread like wildfire throughout the paranormal community, through all sorts of news outlets and everybody. And essentially, well, I'll quote it here. I'll just read it to you. Quote, "It saddens us to share this with you, but this week the Stanley Hotel made the executive decision to cease all paranormal-related events and activities, including public ghost hunts." I should say, including our public ghost hunts. "We understand this to be a part of a long-term strategy to separate the hotel from its associations with the supernatural and focus more on the history. We had a fantastic six-year run, but it seems the end of an era is upon us. We'll miss all of our guests and all of our spirits more than anything. It was an honor to share our experiences with you each week while trying to bring the paranormal into your lives in a way that was down to earth, educational, and more than anything, fun. There was never any doubt that this was an experience of a lifetime, but of course, all rides must end. And in the same way that our jobs were to study what persists after the ride ends, we too will persist after this," unquote. Well, numerous paracelebs reacted in anger, frustration, or just plain confusion about the news that seemed to indicate that there would be no more ghost investigations or other paranormal activities at the hotel. However, the Stanley Hotel clarified the statements by stating that ghost tours would continue. However, the private ghost hunts will no longer be offered. Private ghost investigations typically go on heavily during the winter months and sporadically during the rest of the year, but no longer. And I'm going to pause here for a second and let you know that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And now we go back to Colorado. Well, it's interesting to see the public outcry. And people are being very negative toward this decision, stating that it has been doing this for years, so this justifies them continuing to do so. They also say, well, they're making so much money from this, how can they afford to stop? It's going to put them out of business, right? And now the controversial comments that I'm going to say it. Personally, I'm glad to see a hotel and famous location decide not to be exploited by those that seek out proof of ghosts by exploiting the location for their own subjective experiences. Yes, while it might be a financial hit, it will give the hotel a bit of class that it certainly deserves. I know it might anger some to hear this, but it's just as confusing to me to hear people say how the hotel will suffer without the income from ghost hunts. I'm sure the history of the hotel has just as much meaning to the general public as these ghost hunts do with the minority of people who flock there and the hundreds of other places that allow these kind of lockdowns. The world will go on. You know, there is plenty of places to investigate, and it's just another place. I mean, people burn down these places. We've heard those stories before where people are locked out because of strange things that they do or breaking and entering, so nobody can go in these locations anymore or break rules or laws or whatever. So, you know, things happen, and they run a business there, and it's a business decision that they've made to go in a different direction, and you have to respect that. And again, there's plenty of places to investigate, plenty of other haunted locations that people can go to, and it is what it is, and you can still go on tours there. So it's not like the end of the world. I don't understand why certain paracelebs are lashing out and people are saying, well, you know, I was going to go on vacation there, but not now. That's just ridiculous to have an attitude like that. If you enjoy the history of the location, which is to me is more important than people's EVPs and other things that they gather at that place, that's all well and good, but the history is what makes that building what it is, not ghosts. So hopefully people will respect that and not be so consumed with this decision about the Stanley Hotel in Colorado. Now, speaking of controversial, a man named James Randi. If you've ever heard of James Randi, that name always makes my skin crawl. I don't know about you, but the James Randi Educational Foundation has officially announced that they have terminated the $1 million challenge. Yes, the $1 million challenge. It's another very famous thing in the paranormal. Not as famous as the Stanley Hotel, apparently. And they're, again, terminating the $1 million challenge. But that's just to the general public. The $1 million challenge started back in 1964 as the $10,000 challenge. Sounds like a TV show. And that eventually grew to $100,000 because of a TV show. They wanted to promote this on television. So they kicked in an extra $90,000. And then it became the $1 million challenge in 1996 through a donation by the internet pioneer Rick Adams. So what is the $1 million challenge? Well, probably the more important question is, who is James Randi? And again, if you haven't heard of James Randi, well, you don't know much about the paranormal, I guess. Well, James Randi is an illusionist, magician, author, and hardcore skeptic. He's basically viewed by those in the paranormal as the biggest enemy of the paranormal. And Randi was the co-founder for the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, known as PSICOP, C-S-I-C-O-P, which is now known as the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, or CSI. That's pretty cool, CSI. Now, PSICOP was created in 1976 with the name change coming in 2006. The overall goal of the CSI is to debunk claims of psychics and psi abilities in general. The $1 million challenge was essentially geared toward challenging a psychic or other person with purported paranormal or supernatural abilities to be tested under controlled conditions in order to see if they could back up their claims. Now, over 1,000 people took the challenge, and no one ever succeeded. The challenge had been taken off the table once before, as it was announced in January of 2008 that the prize would end in 2010. However, the offer was put quickly back into place in 2009 and was not to be discontinued. So why the big change? Well, in January of 2015, James Randi retired and stepped down from his position at the James Randi Educational Foundation. The foundation announced in September of last year that the board of directors has decided that it will convert the foundation into a grant-making foundation. That being said, the $1 million challenge isn't actually going away completely. As their website states, quote, effective immediately, JREF will no longer accept applications directly from people claiming to have paranormal power. Previously available application forms shall not be used and will be rejected without any review of the contents. We anticipate providing minimum required protocols for the preliminary test early next year. No one should make any effort to pursue the challenge until those minimum required protocols are issued. The only exception is that any established psychic may contact JREF via email to be tested directly, preferably with an independent third-party TV crew, unquote. So if you're famous, the foundation will gladly create conditions in which you will ultimately fail. The challenge has been criticized by many as being set up to create failure. A pretest is necessary before going to the actual test. Conditions are created and agreed upon by both parties, but there are usually ridiculous odds put into place that would be impossible to replicate and would be statistically well beyond chance. Skeptics may argue the reason that people fail is because there is no such thing as psi, but when the effort seems more focused on debunking claims versus determining possibility, science pretty much goes out the window. And I've always thought it was a good idea to offer some sort of scientific challenge for psi phenomena, but the whole thing, realistically, and some skeptics may disagree, it's pretty much a joke. I mean, it's set up to make these things completely fail. But it's over for the most part. We'll see if anybody continues to go after that now. So we're going to get talking about another story that came out that I got in my email. It's from paranormal.about.com and from the guy Stephen Wagner, who is the paranormal phenomena expert at about.com. And he brings us the 10 commandments of ghost hunting. Essentially, this is a list of 10 things that every group should take into consideration if they intend to take the field seriously. Now, I've put that in the chat room. And if I remember, I got to remember this to put this in the social media links. It's a pretty good article, and it's pretty basic and pretty simple. But if people follow this, first of all, you won't get as much evidence, which is actually a good thing. And the culture of paranormal investigation would change quite a bit. So what are the 10 commandments of ghost hunting? Well, there's actually 11, but the first 10 are thou shalt be informed. Research, find witnesses if possible. Basically, dig into the location's history and not just about what you read on other ghost groups' websites. So research, research, and research. Again, not just websites with quotes or copied and pasted from other, just less than reputable resources, but also finding witnesses, find people that have actually had something to do with these locations, whether it's a client-based case or a ghost hunt type of scenario. Second one here, thou shalt be prepared. And that's beyond research. It's being physically and mentally prepared to go out into the field, or don't go at all. If you're sick, you have personal problems, things weighing on your mind, probably not a good idea to go out into the field, not just because of demonic possession or whatever people are thinking right now, but the fact that you can't give it your all, you can't concentrate on what you're doing, and you can't provide your best observational techniques or helping a client case, you're not going to be able to do a good job if you're not able to be mentally there or physically unable to participate. And also being prepared with this, he's also alluding to the equipment. Make sure your equipment is ready and that you have the necessary batteries, tapes, extension cords, and anything else that you need. And my two cents with that is also know your equipment, know how to use it backwards and forwards before heading out into the field, and know what it's capable of doing and what it's not capable of doing. Know what your digital recorders sound like under all different types of sensitivity settings and things like that. Number three, thou shalt not trespass. I don't think I have to explain that one. I think it pretty much speaks for itself. Every now and again, we have a story here on the Paranormal News Insider where somebody trespasses, they burn something down, they get arrested, they get shot. Something bad usually happens when you trespass. So I don't know why people continue to do it. Number four on the list, thou shalt be respectful. Well, this isn't just about provoking ghosts or not provoking ghosts, rather, but also includes being respectful to the client, the property owner, as well as the investigators within your group. And should also include other groups as well, especially through your Facebook site and everything else. It seems like people are a little bit more adventurous to speak their mind and their opinion on social media than they probably would in face-to-face. But Stephen doesn't talk about that. That's my two cents. The fifth one here, thou shalt not venture off on your own. Safety is the key aspect here, but Stephen also brings up a solid point about the validity of evidence gathered, as you should have at least two witnesses present when gathering anything to preserve the integrity. And that actually leads us to number six. Number six is thou shalt not bear false witness, or what he says as thou shalt not fake evidence. This includes anything from embellishing a subjective experience. Sometimes we get carried away, we get a little scared, we get a little nervous, we think we felt something on our back, so we just jump to that conclusion. I was punched, I was pinched, I was bruised, I was battered, I was beaten, whatever. But sometimes people embellish these things. And also to the extreme of falsifying EVP, photographs, or any other type of evidence. I mean, come on, does this really happen? You'd be surprised, in all honesty, how often this does happen, how many photographs, how many EVPs people fake on purpose, let alone how many are just pareidolia or apophenia, how many are just people jumping to conclusions. Most certainly this happens. Now, once a group bends their integrity, it's really hard to ever be truthful again. And I've known some groups that have gone out there and fabricated a little bit just to feel credible in the field. And then the next thing I know, like everything they do is completely fabricated. And, you know, once you go down that road, there's no coming back. It's rather hard to, you know, be truthful ever again, especially no one's going to believe you anyway, because once somebody can defrag some of your evidence and point it out to be fictional, let alone, you know, realizing that you screwed up by putting something out there that's misinterpretation is one thing, but honestly going out there and making a concerted effort to fake evidence, there's no coming back from that. Number 7, thou shalt be skeptical. His point here is that being skeptical about your evidence will make genuine evidence that is much more valuable and credible. Groups that push photographic orbs and garbled EVP as evidence of ghosts are not trusted by other groups. Trust me, you're not. If you get evidence every single time you're out, you're doing something wrong. I've heard Frank Lee say that a number of times as well. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's evidence. Do not take another group's evidence and claim it's your own. I've seen groups do this as well. Shame, shame, shame. Number 9, thou shalt know thy limits. Know your knowledge and be honest about your experience level. Don't try to help a client if you are seriously unqualified to help them. You will only do more harm than good. Number 10, thou shalt be professional at all times. He essentially says, be honest and use the highest degree of integrity possible. Approach this work with seriousness, skepticism, and above all else, honesty that transcends your willingness to believe. Now, Wagner points out an 11th commandment here that says, thou shalt not charge for thy investigations. Well, I say along with this goes, thou shalt not call thine selves nonprofit or not-for-profit unless having submitted the proper paperwork to obtain a 501c3 or have an LLC that is on file with your state. I see so many groups that call themselves nonprofit or not-for-profit, not understanding that that's an actual legal term that you have to be qualified in order to put that on your website or call yourself that as well. So the top 10 there for Stephen Wagner's 10 Commandments of Ghost Hunting on about.com. In other news, kind of excited about this, but looking out now, it's not cloudy. I see blue skies out there. So hopefully tomorrow morning when I go to work, I'll be able to check this thing out. I'm going to break out my binoculars for this. But this story coming from space.com, a comet known as Linear and formerly known as 252P can be seen in the skies during the last few days of March. The interesting thing about this comet is that it appears as a green mist in the sky. This isn't your traditional comet with the long noticeable tail like Halley's Comet was in the late 80s, but this comet will be an interesting spectacle if you're able to see it in the sky. That's a big if, because the moon is still in the waning gibbous phase. And as of tonight, I believe it's around 71% full. And that's not going to help, especially the location of this, which is actually pretty close to where the moon's going to be. However, if you have access to a dark area outside and you don't suffer from light pollution like we do here in Northeast Ohio, also recommend some binoculars or telescope. You just might be able to spot the comet. According to Sky and Telescope senior editor Kelly Beatty, quote, its light isn't concentrated in a single point, but instead is spread out in a soft round glow larger than the moon, but many thousands of times dimmer, unquote. The article on space.com states, quote, observers should go outside at least 90 minutes before sunrise in a dark area and look for the comet between the constellations Sagittarius and Scorpius, unquote. Now, if you have no idea where the constellations are, you can also find the comet by finding Mars and Saturn in the sky. Linear will be in line with Mars and Saturn on tonight, March 29th, and in line with Saturn and Antares, a bright red star in the constellation Scorpius, on March 31st. The moon will also be close by, particularly on March 30th. It will be just 3 degrees to the lower right of the comet. Now, if you have no idea of the stars and constellations, I would personally recommend downloading the Space Junk app if you have a smartphone. With this, you can merely point it up at the sky, and it's going to tell you what you're looking at so you can find where the comet is. Now, the comet won't actually be on the app, but the constellations and all those things will point you in the right direction. And last but not least here on the stories, a story that's been floating around the internet about a supposed satanic ritual dungeon discovered in the basement of a Chuck E. Cheese restaurant in Chicago, Illinois. Yeah, people actually believe this is true. Now, I saw it. I laughed, personally. The story states, quote, authorities have identified the skeletal remains found at a Chuck E. Cheese basement in Chicago of those as those of four teenagers that disappeared between 2013 and 2015. Multiple media outlets reported that the teenagers were local residents of the city. Charged in their deaths is the owner, 68-year-old Melvin Wallace. There is another woman being charged as an accessory to the murders. Court documents allege that Wallace regularly performed satanic rituals and animal sacrifices in the Chuck E. Cheese basement where the bodies were found. The basement dungeon where the bodies were discovered was full of mold, garbage, debris, animal feces, as several satanic markings. Police say the children were more often than likely abducted from the Family Fun Center. Parents who regularly take their children to the Chicago Chuck E. Cheese say they are shocked at the findings, unquote. Well, they wouldn't have been shocked, if all these kids were disappearing there, and they wouldn't be shocked if this was an actual story, but it's not. Like I said, I actually laughed when I read the article, but I was pretty confident that it wasn't true. But what was troublesome to me was I noticed quite a few people that were taking it serious. They were commenting on it and being appalled and making all kinds of horrific accusations towards this person. People were sharing the story as if it was legitimate. So I did the research just to be 100% sure, and it didn't take too long to realize that it originated from a news spoof story, and all the things that were supposed facts were completely made up. The story originated on a website called Now 8 News, which is a known spoof website that contains fake news stories created for clickbait to sell advertising. TMZWorldNews.com also carried the story and is also a known fake news site. According to Snopes, quote, the base image of the Chuck E. Cheese location used by Now 8 News was swiped from a 2013 article about a fight at one of the family entertainment restaurants, and the attached photograph of a presumably satanic suspect was taken from a website collection of sex offender mugshots and depicted an individual arrest in 2000. So the story, yeah, not true. But it was a viral story and concerning to me because some people were taking it serious. But it's over now, and we can rest easy, and we can all go to Chuck E. Cheese because it's so much fun. I've been at Chuck E. Cheese, I don't know how long. Lots of fun, great video games. I remember the ski ball and all that stuff. Lots of fun there. Anyway, book of the week this week, kind of going in a Bigfoot direction, cryptozoology direction, but Bigfoot, especially with the all my cryptid stuff coming up in the next 2 months, I guess, month and a half, whatever. So book of the week this week is The Best of Sasquatch Bigfoot, written by John Green. This book was published in 2004. And the cool thing about this book for me is I bought it in Washington State. Now, John Green is a West Coaster. He lives in British Columbia. He's been an investigator for over 40 years. He's now retired. He's, I believe he's 87 years old, still alive from the last time I heard anything about him. But he's collected more than 4,000 reports. He's a graduate of the University of British Columbia and the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism in New York. So he's a writer, but he's also a researcher and investigator. Again, this is a West Coast type of stuff here. The Best of Sasquatch Bigfoot is actually a compilation of two prior books. His first book, On the Track of the Sasquatch, which was written back in 1968, I believe, and also Encounters with Bigfoot, which was written in 1994. Now, this book, in specifically The Best of Sasquatch Bigfoot, is a compilation, again, of those two books, along with some latest scientific developments. But this book was published back in 2004, so it's a little bit out of date. But what I'm sure I really like about this is that it's untainted, because it's It's old. The two books, like I said, from the 60s, it's untainted by current events, untainted by a lot of speculation and crazy hypotheses that are floating out around there. And this book is chock full of tons of photographs, early photographs, and a lot of other information, articles, photographs, stories, interviews by a lot of people that were early on in cryptid research with Sasquatch and Bigfoot, predating some of the stuff. There's stories in here from the 1930s, and John Green interviewed Fred Beck, who was one of the, I think 1934, he was involved in one of the largest Bigfoot stories early on, where he was attacked in a cabin and purportedly shot a Bigfoot that fell over a cliff, which is now known as Ape Canyon. So John's been around. He's one of the last remaining, or actually the last living person to investigate the 1958 tracks, which led to the name Bigfoot. So this book, again, it's invaluable. To get your hands on this, buy it. As soon as I saw it, I bought it right away because I knew what it was, and I knew who John Green was, that I've read, was able to read Encounters with Bigfoot, and I wanted all the older stuff. And so I love this book. It's great. Like I said, it's chock full of lots of old articles, lots of pictures. And again, it's written by a journalist. So he does the research, and this is as true as you're going to get them. And they do talk about some of the potential fictitious stuff out there, people faking tracks and things like that. But it's pretty balanced. Yeah, it is a little bit pro Bigfoot, but it's to me, it's pretty balanced. As balanced as you're going to get for you know, a pro Bigfoot type of book. But again, I really enjoy it. 2004, and the content in it, some of it's from the 60s, and as well as some interviews between those times. But it's a fantastic historical documentation of Sasquatch and Bigfoot research. So I promised I'd talk about some events here, last remaining minutes. A lot of stuff going on this weekend. Speaking of West Coast, Oregon Ghost Conference, April 1st through the 3rd in Seaside, Oregon. The Hudson Valley Paracon in New York takes place April 1st through the 3rd in New Paltz, New York. And the Gift of Light Expo in my backyard, April 2nd through the 3rd in Cleveland, Ohio. And the following weekend, we have SalemCon 2 in Salem, Massachusetts. The 2016 New England Parafest, April 9th in New Hampshire, Hampton Beach, New Hampshire. And like the beginning of the show, I mentioned the 9th Annual Butler Paranormal Conference, April 16th. And I'll be speaking at that event. As far as UFO stuff, Ozark Mountain UFO Conference takes place April 8th through the 10th in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And the Aurora Alien Encounter, really cool. Wish I could go to that one. April 16th in Aurora, Texas, because I'm preoccupied that day anyway. And the MUFON PA Conference 2016 in Erie takes place April 30th in Erie, Pennsylvania. And that's your rundown for the events coming up next month in April. And during the next couple of weeks, we'll dig into some of these a little deeper and talk about some of the people that are going to be there and what some of these events are all about. And obviously, after my appearance at the Butler Paranormal Conference, well, I won't be rambling on for the first 5 minutes of the show talking about it, but I will spend one show kind of breaking it down and disseminating some of the information that that I talked about, as well as what I heard from the other speakers at that event. I always have a lot of fun. It's so much fun to listen to the other people speak, just as much as it is for me to get up there and talk about what I like to talk about. But I am there to listen to the other people and to learn from them, as well as, you know, also to rub elbows and network with people, gather some information and updates and some research topics that I'm doing, and, you know, take your notes with you and talk with some of these guys. It's always a good time to meet these people, no matter if they're paracelebs or they're, you know, the grassroots type of guys, which I enjoy because that's kind of what I am. And it's always a lot of fun. So check it out, paranormalnewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab, at the top. And if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, as well as see it on the website, let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com, or you can click on the About Contact link at the top of the webpage, paranewsinsider.com. Check out my legs. You see my legs there? My legs are pointing right at that link. Click on that. It comes up to a little form. You can let me know about your event, or if you have a news story, you have a book you'd like me to talk about on the book of the week, it's fair game. You want to criticize me on my show? Cool. Go for it. Whatever you do, it'll make me better. And I think that's it. Oh, I wanted to mention too, you know, talking about social media, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and archives now through, what do we got? Mixcloud. And Podbean, my host here, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, all that stuff. You know, and I made fun of it, I think once or twice or three times. I made fun of Pinterest. Well, I got bored the other day and created a Pinterest page. I don't have a link up to it yet on the website, but yes, Brian Parsons is on Pinterest. I've caved in. And what I'm doing with that is I'm putting a lot of links to anomalous books worth reading. I'm up to 76 right now, and throwing some mysterious places in there. And I'm going to start doing some stories as well, links to stories, links to some pictures involved in stories. I think it's a cool outlet to talk about some of this stuff in an interesting and different way. Kind of surprised a lot of people have already found it and commenting on it, which is pretty cool. So beyond that, an hour from now, if you're listening live, go get a snack and come back. Be sure to listen in at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. Frank Lee is going to be talking to best-selling author Robin Murphy on the Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show with host Frank Lee right here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting at WCJVRadio.com. And see, yeah, I thought I forgot about that, but I got it and snuck it in there under the wire at the last second. And again, big thanks to appreciate everybody listening in the chat room. Again, it's always nice to have you guys there. I'm sorry I don't interact as much as I should, but you guys break my concentration. Just kidding. No, it's I just got bad habit. I don't know. I don't peep in there enough, but I do keep an eye on there every now and again. And speaking of keeping your eye on something, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, and a hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Okay, you're clear.
All right.
That was a great show.
Yeah, it was a lot of information.
Yes, it was. Holy cow. Okay, I got to get this thing down off the air again, so I'll be back in a minute.